Good morning. Our opening words are by the poet John O'Donohue, called Four Presents. Awaken to the mystery of being here, and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. Have joy and peace in the temple of your senses. Receive encouragement when new frontiers beckon. Respond to the call of your gift and the courage to follow its path. Let the flame of anger free you of all falsity. May warmth of heart keep your presence aflame. May anxiety never linger around you. May your outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of soul. Take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. Be consoled in the secret symmetry of your soul. May you experience each day, including this day, as a sacred gift woven around the heart of wonder. We will now be blessed with music from our choir, who will sing to us something about the heart of wonder. Our reading this morning is a poem by Killian McDonnell, who is a Benedictine monk as well as a theologian and a professor. And I had to look up a word, so I thought I would share the definition of the word in this poem, figuring that if I had to look it up, maybe someone here also didn't know it. The word is amplitudes, and it refers to the point in a wave that's largest. So you can kind of have that image in your mind, okay? The Monks of St. John's File In for Prayer by Killian McDonnell. In we shuffle, hooded amplitudes, scapulared brooms, a stray earring, skinheads and flowing locks, blind in one eye, hook-nosed, handsome and as a prince and knows it, a five-thumbed organist, an acolyte who sings in quarter tones, one slightly swollen keeper of the bees, the carpenter, minus a finger here and there, our pre-senile writing deathless verse, a stranded sailor, a Cassian scholar, the artist, suffering the visually illiterate and indignities unnamed, two determined liturgists. In a word, eager purity and weary virtue. Last of all, the Lord Abbot, early old, shepherding the saints is like herding cats. These chariots and steeds of Israel make a black progress into church. A rumble of monks bows low and offers praise to the high God of gods who is faithful forever. Sometimes my response to being alive is pure awe. Not all the time. I don't move through the world continuously awestruck. But sometimes, when faced with the love of a friend, the immensity of the ocean, the stars in the night sky, I am enveloped in awe. It's like what our choir sang to us earlier. Sure, on this shining night, I weep for wonder, wandering far alone of shadows on the stars. Sometimes I weep for wonder. And I want to honor that feeling of smallness in the hugeness, of solitude yet togetherness, this pure awesomeness of being alive. What do I do with that feeling? How do I honor such awe? The word sacred comes from the Latin word and I'm very aware that there's a Latin teacher in the room as I'm saying this, sacrare, as far as I know, that word means to dedicate or set apart. The word worship comes from an Old English word, which I won't try to pronounce, but that means to acknowledge or celebrate things of worth. This morning we are reflecting on these words, sacred and worship. How do we designate this time as set apart? How so that we may pay homage to things of worth? The worship format we use here, and in so many Unitarian Universalist congregations, this particular format has a long history. Rebecca Parker and John Burens, UU ministers and theologians, note that our basic pattern of worship comes from ancient synagogue practice. A prayer of invocation, a psalm chanted, or later a hymn sung, and many hymns grew out of psalms, a scriptural reading or two, prayers, a sermon explicating and applying the spiritual wisdom of the scriptures, a final psalm or hymn, and a blessing. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. The early Christians, being members of what was at first a sect of Judaism, used this format as well. And now, millennia later, these basic elements have persisted through evolution and change in Catholic masses, in Protestant worship service, coming to us so that us Unitarians have inherited this same basic format. Prayers, songs, scripture or readings, sermon, benediction. Later in our service, we will sing The Spacious Firmament on High as our closing hymn, and that actually is based on Psalm 19, a psalm of praise in the face of great awe. This is just one example of countless hymns that have been adapted from Psalms over the generations since the ancient Israelites first composed and sang the Psalms. The Psalms in the Bible began as chants. Our continued use of this ancient worship form, our retooling of these old forms across many thousands of years, connects us across the generations, connects us to the whole story of the human family, and tunes us into and invites us to participate in this ancient conversation with the divine. The flaming chalice that we use, that we light each Sunday, has a special history. The Unitarian Service Committee, now the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, was founded in 1939 to assist refugees from Eastern Europe who needed to escape Nazi persecution. An Austrian named Hans Deutsch, who had escaped the Nazis himself, was working as an assistant to the director of the Service Committee in 1940. The director asked Hans Deutsch to create a symbol for the relatively unknown Unitarian Service Committee so that they could be recognized and look official and have the spirit of their work be visible. So as UU historian and former minister in Watertown, my former supervisor, Reverend Mark Harris, explains that the chalice is a sacred symbol, the chalice being the cup part, is a sacred symbol to many faiths, representing a common drinking vessel that is shared among many. The flame may represent the triumph of fear, the triumph of truth over fear and superstition. Hans Deutsch was deeply moved by the work of the Unitarian Service Committee, saying, "If your kind of life is the profession of your faith, then religion, ceasing to be magic and mysticism, becomes active, really useful social work, to which even a godless fellow like myself can say wholeheartedly, yes." So he designed this chalice with a flame, and it was emblazoned on the Unitarian Service Committee's letterhead, on badges that agents for the committee wore, and on the sides of their vehicles as they drove moving refugees to freedom. The flaming chalice has become a symbol for a life of service to others, or even the light of hope in difficult times, And it has become a focal point for worship and a common ritual that many of us Unitarian Universalists find inspiring and comforting. With its rootedness in this particular response to the evil of Nazism, and the fact that it draws on the religious symbols of the chalice and the flame, the flaming chalice represents reverence that is engaged with history. Here in this congregation, as in the majority of UU churches, we light our chalice early on in our worship services to mark this as sacred time. Almost any time we gather in this congregation as well, I'm sure you've noticed, we light our chalice in our meetings and in our small group ministries. Whenever we light a chalice, it connects us to our call to do good work in the world and to Unitarian Universalists across this country and beyond. Because of the Judeo-Christian roots of our faith movement, we are connected through our worship form to one particular way among many, many ways that people pay homage to the holy. But as Unitarian Universalists, we also look to the wisdom of all the world's religions in our search for truth and meaning. And as people committed to practicing anti-oppression and multicultural inclusion, we strive to draw from a diversity of sources. So how can we engage faithfully with the faith practices of other cultures and religious traditions without getting into the territory of misappropriation, without disrespecting or desecrating what others hold holy? Part of how we begin to answer these questions calls us to draw upon our experiences of reverence and awe. In our family service this morning, we told the story of Moses and the burning bush. You may know this story. Before he was a prophet and leader of his people, the story goes from the book of Exodus. Moses was tending to the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for where you are standing is holy ground. And so Moses removes his sandals, and God sends him on a holy mission to free the Israelites who were enslaved in Egypt. So in our family service, we focused on the part of the story when Moses is commanded to remove his sandals, and he does so, for he is on holy ground. We may think of others' religious practices as holy ground as well. The late Reverend Marjorie Bowens Wheatley was a UU minister who wrote about misappropriation from her perspective as a Black woman and religious leader in our faith movement. She exhorts us to take off our shoes when approaching the religious and cultural practices of others, to have the same reverence for these practices as Moses did before God. We are called to understand the worship practices we wish to draw from well enough to be able to give them context and be fully assured of if it's appropriate to use them in our UU setting. In some cases, to take off our shoes before using others' traditions or cultures will mean first to reckon with legacies or current realities of colonialism and racism. Bowens Wheatley asks several prophetic anti-racist questions of us. What does it really mean to respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person in terms of their culture or religion? How is that principle made manifest in our approach to religious education, programming, worship, even our personal lives? She asks, will you continue to borrow pieces of my culture simply because you like it? Or will you stand in solidarity with me against oppression? As a religious community, she goes on, a community of justice and hope, if we are to err, let it be on the side of caution. Let it be on the side of equality and justice. Church isn't the only place where we worship, right? It's not the only place that we can set apart time or space to direct our attention to things of worth. I was a chaplain intern before I was a chaplain resident, and between those two stints as a chaplain, I had a baby. I had that baby in the same hospital where I had been an intern. My internship supervisor was a loving and radiant chaplain named Ron. After I finished my internship, Ron and I stayed in touch, and he has since been a mentor and friend to me. So at some point in the haze of days that followed June's birth, Ron got wind of the fact that I had her and that we were in the maternity ward of the hospital where he served as chaplain. He texted me to ask if he may visit us. I was inclined to say no. Adam and I had had about 4 hours of sleep between the two of us over the course of a number of days we had lost track of. Adam was about to finally take advantage of a moment to shower. I didn't exactly tell Ron not to come, but I didn't exactly tell him to come. He came anyway. He came right into the room, walked right up to the bed, and kissed me on the cheek. There I was, with an infant struggling to nurse. I was exhausted, scarcely able to complete a sentence. But Ron didn't seem in the least bit concerned. After this sweet and surprising greeting, he sat in a chair in the corner of the room. Adam must have heard his arrival from inside the bathroom, and he came back out. He never made it into the shower. Before Ron got there, Adam and I had been merely trying to make it from one moment to the next, troubleshooting and strategizing our way through much stress and confusion. But when Ron arrived, the energy in the room shifted. I had not remotely begun to comprehend the awesomeness of what had just occurred. A new human life was in the world, but I hadn't had the presence of mind to contemplate such things. What Ron brought was his simple presence. The presence of one whose role in that room was to remind us of our connection to one another, to the story of the human family, our connection to the universe. Ron's visit is a bright spot in what is otherwise mush. Memories of sleeplessness, fussing with the right configuration of pillows for a couple of inexperienced breastfeeders, and a great deal of new parent jitters. Ron got us to pause and notice our feelings, bewilderment, amazement, gratitude. When he was in the room, Adam and I could talk to one another, express our feelings to each other, and offer our praises for one another and for June's tiny new life. Ron's visit moved us to stop worrying about what would happen in 10 minutes and instead brought us into the present. He created a sacred and worshipful moment right there in the hospital room. Worship can be like this, offering us a respite from the overwhelmingness of the everyday, the apparent mundaneness of the world, in part by asking us to be open to the possibility of presence and wonderment. The intense stress I felt in the hospital is not uncommon for any of us as we move through this life. We are juggling, we are confused, we are disconnected. But through all of this, we carry inside of us a divine spark. Through all of this, we are recipients of life's gifts, and we bear the pain of life's storms. And worship gives us sacred space and sacred time to reflect on and celebrate these deeper truths so that they don't get lost in the everydayness of the everyday. Rumpled and quirky as the monks in the poem that I read may be, they still have praise to offer. Rumpled and quirky as we all are, Still, we come here to this sacred time and sacred space to worship. The monk's praise is to the high God of gods who is faithful forever. For some of us here, our praise or lament or gratitude or supplication, for some of us, these are offered to God. For some of us, these are offered to ourselves, to one another, to life itself. For some of us, we're not sure, and we're here to sit with that question. Whatever it took to get us here, we made it. And here we are, in search of the sacred, worshiping with one another. My prayer and meditation today is on another part of our service, a part that I find quite sacred, our joys and concerns. This is another element of what we do here with one another. We offer testimonies from our week, and we ask things of one another, and we ask things of the universe. And so if you'll join me in prayer and meditation for a few moments. Where do I put my joy when it's cascading out of me, tumbling down like a mountain stream that suddenly drops free over a cliff? What basin could ever catch all this overflowing joy? Where do I put my sorrow when my heart breaks so hard no sound can come out of my mouth? When it seems beyond healing, this silencing, shattering sorrow. If I share my joy, though it's too boisterous to handle, if I share my sorrow when it hurts to even speak, if I reach out to something greater than myself, be it God, the love of a friend, the shimmering wonder of this life, let me trust that these can hold me in my happiness and in my pain. Let me feel that someone is listening. Let's share a few moments of silent meditation together. Our closing words this morning are adapted from a Jewish prayer book called Gates of Prayer, called How Filled with Awe. Days pass and the years vanish, and we walk sightless among miracles. Spirit of life, fill our eyes with seeing and our minds with knowing. Let there be moments when your presence, like lightning, illumines the dark in which we walk. Help us to see wherever we gaze that the bush burns unconsumed, and we, clay touched by spirit, will reach out for holiness and exclaim in wonder, how filled with awe is this place, and we did not know it. Go in peace.